You know, I'm sad that we're closing, but I'm also really excited because what we're moving on to, I feel, is a big part of what the future of dining in Australia might look like.
Anyone who's been listening to this pod over the past few weeks will know that we have been asking different people whether or not hospitality is broken. I am really thrilled to bring to the conversation somebody whose answer is an emphatic hell no. Hospitality isn't broken. Her name is Jo Barrett. She is a frequent guest and even host of Dirty Linen. She took over the podcast on the occasion of her book Sustain coming out. Jo has some news to share about her restaurant Little Picket and what she's up to at the moment. Welcome back, Jo.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's good to be back on my favourite podcast.
Well, it's always a pleasure to chat to you, no matter the occasion. Jo, share some news with us.
We are not renewing our lease of Little Picket at the Lawn Bowls Club, and we are finishing up in about a month.
Well, as you know, and I certainly know, when people hear that news, they're likely to have a response. But tell me why that doesn't really align with the way that you're feeling.
It's definitely been the response to our local, you know, a few people in our local community. I think it's because it's on my terms and on Dave's terms. So we've decided that we're going to finish out on a high. And when we started Little Picket, we weren't really sure what it was going to be. And we also had plans. We'd started another business at the same time with a few other partners. And it was always the kind of goal to do both simultaneously. And, you know, Little Picket, with all its success, and it's just been an incredible time, really hard and lots of hard work, but extremely rewarding, that we haven't been able to do the other business. So it's kind of time to put our focus onto that. And I've been saying the other day, I just don't have the capacity to be able to split my focus and step away from having a restaurant and not be there cooking, because I love cooking. So the idea is to finish that and then focus on the other one, and then, you know, come back to having a restaurant later on when I've got the time.
So, I mean, what I love hearing from you is that this is on your terms. So tell us about the things that you're up to next, the things you haven't had enough time to do.
Yeah, it's really interesting with the whole idea of shutting a restaurant and it failing and kind of sticking to that mold of, you know, I often compare it to other industries, and I'm not sure that in another industry you have to justify what you're doing. And I try and think about that of, you know, it's our business, we've put the money in, it's on our terms. So that has been at the forefront in my mind, which is why, you know, I'm sad that we're closing, but I'm also really excited because what we're moving on to, I feel, is a big part of what the future of dining in Australia might look like. And it's around wild food. And it has been kind of growing in momentum for a while. And we have these amazing people like Anthony from Dharma Dharma and Billy and Tara from Discovered, kind of harvesting venison. And that was a big part of what we spoke about on the podcast when Sustain came out. But we're starting a wild pie, like a wild food company making pies, trying to push the idea of venison and these culling programs that we have in place in Australia becoming a bit more on your plate day to day, and more approachable for people. And a pie is quite an approachable thing.
It certainly is. I feel like everybody loves pies. So I know that you say that wild food is gaining momentum, and that's certainly true, but I would say it's still pretty niche. Like, you're very inside this world. For people who, you know, never think about eating venison or wallaby or wild boar day to day, week to week, or perhaps ever in their lives, like, why is this something that we should engage with?
I think the idea of, you know, wild food that's free ranging and organic is really exciting. The nutrient density of the food, the fact that there's quite an abundance of it at the moment, it's not farmed, has no antibiotics or anything like that that we're using. I think people are really conscious of what they're putting into their bodies at the moment and kind of trying to gain a little bit of control back over that. So I think that is a massive part. And then I guess there's the other side of it where we have culling programs at the moment. And it's a wasted kind of product that is high in protein that we could be using. So it seems a bit of a waste to me that we kind of are paying to shoot it. And then, you know, in a lot of cases, it just dies out there, which has a ripple effect on wild dogs and, you know, our native animals eating those, you know, dying or dead animals and them being poisoned as well. So it's kind of, there's two parts to it. It's really good for you, and then there's an abundance of it. So it seems like the right step to move forward.
And what about the eat the problem side of things?
Well, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, in on Flinders Island, they're culling wallaby at the moment, you know, for farming is a bit of a catch, you know, because we introduced farming, so then we're culling them, but it's happening. So we may as well be eating them. So there are issues happening where, you know, with deer, they've got a pretty big impact on the environment with the tree rubbing, just the sheer population of them, how they are affecting farming with eating grass and getting into paddocks and, you know, also road trauma. So there are a lot of issues around it, and it's just delicious. So I think by getting people to start eating it a bit more and in a really approachable way, and then also starting to share information on how to cook it, is really exciting. So, you know, sharing videos or just sharing information with people so chefs can put it on their menus seems really exciting to me, because I feel like we could bang on about, you've got to use it, but if you people don't know how to, they're not going to.
Yeah, amazing. And there's another project you're working on as well. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, which I'm really excited about. I hope that we can get it off the ground kind of in the midst of working on that at the moment. So Matt Preston introduced me to the guys at CSIRO on a bakery day, and we went down and I showed some of my products that I make that use up wasted bread. And I think often with the CSIRO, people go with an issue and then they solve it to come up with a solution. And I had a solution to the bread waste that happens in Australia. So they're really excited, and they've been assisting me in helping develop 100% bread waste product. And we're hoping to kick off a solid project in the next coming weeks where we will develop a full process for people to utilise bread waste. So in Australia, when we spoke to Sam Oakden, he had some really interesting figures that, you know, 575,000 ton of bread is going into landfill each year in Australia. We can be utilising that, you know, by turning it into different things. So pre-summer, I was going to the CSIRO Innovation Food Lab each week and working with them, and then summer hit and we were too busy at the restaurant. So now just kind of kicking off and trying to get a project started with them, which is just so exciting. Love working with the scientists on that and realizing that I have learned a lot about wheat and bread and how it reacts, and it's really cool to get some answers of what's actually happening on a chemical level when working with them. So I'm really kind of sucked into that vortex at the moment, and that's another reason why standing at a bench in a kitchen, I can see all these issues happening around me and around us, and I've got some answers, or I feel like I can contribute. It's really hard when you're consumed by running a business.
Yeah, I mean, it's I've followed your career, you know, for a while, Joe, and I feel like you're always pushing, you're always challenging yourself to learn and to problem solve. So I think in so many ways, this feels very logical. And when you can see a way to create change at scale, like, why wouldn't you walk along that path? I think it's interesting, you know, as diners, we mostly engage with chefs through this restaurant context. But I think what you're perhaps doing is trying to reimagine what it might mean to be a chef today. I mean, how do you respond to that?
Well, yeah, it's really interesting. I think that's why I firmly believe that I think hospitality is really challenging and times are changing, and we have to evolve with that. But we can't let it die. I think we just have to evolve with it, because the impact that it has on people's lives is huge. You know, yesterday we had a guest come in and came into the kitchen, and she's like, I heard you're closing, and she started to cry. And then she said, this place, you know, especially the Bowls Club, has a really beautiful feeling about it. And a lot of people come together there and their families. And it's had a few iterations with past chefs. And she just gave us a card and congratulated the whole team. And yeah, as she was crying, it was tears of happiness, but you could see the impact it had on her life. And that's just one person and one restaurant. And I know that that happens in many restaurants, and we gather in these places and they're such a big part of everybody's lives. But I feel like as a community, we still need to get together around it. And, you know, if we can step out and think about some different ideas of chefs and kind of find some stable ground, and if I could do some research and I can help peers, then I'm really happy to do that, because I'm really also enjoying it as well, refiguring out what hospitality is going to look like in the future and what we need to do as a group, because restaurants are so important for our country, for tourism, for our communities. Like, we can't let them die.
Well, Little Picket isn't closing because it wasn't profitable. Like, tell us about what you've learnt about running a business, and perhaps what other people could take from the model that you set up. And, yeah, you know, it's positives and any flaws that you noticed as well.
Yeah, I guess Dave and I went into the restaurant not really knowing what to do, and we had a really strong feeling about the Bowls Club because it has such an incredible charm. And we met the committee members and the president, and they were from the get-go extremely supportive. And I guess after finishing Future Food System, I really questioned about restaurants, you know, just setting up shop and it being about the chef. And I felt like it was more about that, whereas this felt like there was a gap where the community needed a restaurant. There was already an existing space. We could negotiate a really good contract that was quite, you know, we're learning as you guys are learning, having us here, it's something that we've never done before. And then we also had a members base. So there was a few ideas around like the amount of money to put in versus what we might get back out, because we had a members base there. So we thought I would have, you know, at least some guests coming to the restaurant. If we don't succeed, the members still need to be fed. And then at the time, you know, Lawn was changing with Toddy's not being opened yet, and the guys at Ipsos weren't open. So there was a bit of a need for a restaurant like that. And then there was no one serving local food. So we took all those things into consideration. And then I also just wanted to cook what I wanted to cook with local food, and we just ran with it and let our community kind of mold what we were going to be. I think also my parents love eating out, and I listened to what they say about restaurants and tried to change things that I could see that they were either complaining about, because we had the same demographic of like the boomer crowd, and we also had Melbourne diners, because a lot of people in Lawn come from Melbourne with their holiday home. So they're really savvy eaters. And then we just went for it. We just had one team 3 days a week for that reason, to try and not have multiple staff, because dealing with staff's really hard. And then some of the downfalls that we've had are our booking system, which was, we didn't have one. We just had a leather diary and a phone and an email address. Because we didn't want to spend money on a booking system, because we weren't sure if we'd get the bookings. So we thought we'd do it ourselves. We also had older people who may not be jumping on the internet to make an internet booking so they could call. And that's probably been our biggest mistake, because we've spent a heap of time on the computer taking bookings, and it's pretty exhausting. And I can see it's frustrating for people wanting to get an answer. We've been really savvy where we spent money. So we wash all our own linen, because my mum made our tea towels, like our serviettes, out of old Australiana tea towels. So we didn't have a laundry service down here. It's probably saved us a lot of money. I think when I was at Oak Ridge, did the figures on that, and it was something like $27,000 a year on linen. So we've been able to, it's been us doing it, but I think we've saved money. So it does come at a cost that you're tired, but you know, you do save money in that way. So, yeah, we're not closing because we're not making money or we're not full. The reason why we haven't announced that we're closing any sooner is because we've been booked out, which is really amazing.
Wow. And I'm so interested in this focus group of your mum and dad. What insights did they share?
Well, you know, it started off where my mum's going to kill me, but you know, she was the typical person that we almost complain about. I'm so sorry, Mum. Where she was like, would send her coffee back because it wasn't hot enough, or would come ask for water. Just that, a little, not annoying because she's not an annoying person, but just really interesting observation of the things that she was complaining about or how she'd want to eat out with her friends and either share or not share a meal. And I can see those people hanging out in Lawn as well. So I designed the menu that there were sharing elements in the entrees that were easy for us to kind of execute and low waste and things like that. But then designed dishes that were complete meals for people who didn't want to share because we have an older demographic and that tends to happen. So they were complete dishes. So just tried to shape things that if my family were coming to dine, I know I have some fussy eaters and some adventurous eaters, and then there's my grandparents. I wanted them to feel welcome. And then there's young people who eat in the city all the time and like natural wine. So we just tried to have a spot, even if it was one thing, that would make that person feel welcome. And then it's worked. We also have bowlers who just want to come in and bowl and drink Carlton. And, you know, we sell heaps of Carlton.
I love it. So, Joe, when you came on, when you did your podcast takeover, you chatted about wild food, you chatted about waste. We've covered those in this conversation as well. It seems like you're actually so consistent. I can see the through line. The other person that you spoke to was Matthew Evans, and that was around soil and farming. I'm sure you've got a story about how that's carrying through this next stage as well.
Yeah, so we've been really lucky to work with Bell's Harvest, which is a really small kind of private farm in Janjuk, who they do veggie boxes for the locals, like 15 of them a week. And we've gotten involved with them where we've been able to work there on a Wednesday picking and growing veg for the restaurant and then, you know, throughout the week. And then also with Kinsfolk, Tom and Bridie in Moriak, who are just the most exciting growers to me. You know, they're doing regenerative farming, but they are feeding our local community here with the Torquay Farmers Market. And I guess they have a small business as well. So to be able to share, you know, the things that are really difficult and the things that are amazing and working together on that's been awesome. But I can see the struggles that they're having, and there's been times where I wish I could help, but I haven't been able to because I am in the kitchen. And I'm really looking forward to getting involved with that because I can see that they're tired, but they are also a big part of what differentiates Little Picket to a lot of the other restaurants here and around town, because we have access to incredible ingredients. And same with growing food at Bell's Harvest, we've got a point of difference. And you know, as we've kind of gone through the last almost 2 years, I can see how important that is. And if they get tired and they give up, all our restaurants are going to be the same because we don't have access to small growers anymore. And, you know, they have the same struggles that we all have in business with employees and staff, like paying staff appropriate wages and just doing it all yourself. And then you get tired and you get burnt out and then you give up. And I feel like we really need to support those primary producers because they are what make our restaurants so unique. And I think at the moment, talking to Tom and Bridie, a lot of government help goes to some of those big growers. And sure, they should. They're feeding the nation. But at the same time, they're not probably growing in an appropriate way for our environment. Whereas, you know, small growers like Tom and Bridie and a lot of people like that, are doing the right thing, but they're not necessarily getting any help. So that is another part that I would like to, especially on the Surf Coast, there's this huge movement around, you know, growing appropriately for the environment and what food looks like with Sustainable Table and Farm My School. And I'd really like to get involved with some of those projects because I feel like I'm just at the start of growing food. It's something I'm really interested in.
So can you see a way forward where you will have a restaurant in the future?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I really love cooking. That's probably gotten stronger with owning a restaurant, even though your focus gets split between a lot of other aspects of, you know, the bookings or the setting tables, the cleaning, the staffing, the ordering, and, you know, dishwasher breaks, takes all your focus away. However, the part that I've found respite in all of that has been writing the menu and creating dishes, and I kind of would like to take the time away from the restaurant to get better at cooking as well and practice different techniques. And sometimes you run out of time when you just have to put a dish on and you're like, I know I could do this a bit better or make it a little bit more interesting, but I just don't have that extra day to test if I cooked it overnight, would it work? So I'm really pumped about getting back to some, you know, making some cheeses that I can age for amount of time and some different fermenting and some charcuterie and, yeah, improving my cooking, I guess.
I love the thought that the chef of the year is going to improve her cooking, but I hear you. Of course, we're always learning. So, Joe, as you know, we've been asking this question on the podcast, is hospitality broken? Is it?
No, it's changing. It's consolidating, as we all are, I think, and we just need to work together. I think we've got too many restaurants in some ways, which has its benefits. It's exciting that people get their chance to show themselves on a plate or, you know, but there's a lot. There's a lot of waste that goes into setting up a restaurant and then closing them again, and all the used equipment just sits there, and I hate that side of hospitality. It's really, you know, we got a lot of our stuff from hotels that had closed or secondhand equipment, and it just, you can be savvy in finding existing spaces and then just be different on the plate and with the, like, things that are really interesting to people. I don't necessarily think it has to worry about the aesthetic as much. I think we need those restaurants, but then we also need places to feed people that are healthy and exciting and different because of the people involved in it. You know, we have really interesting staff at Little Picket. We've tried not to censor anyone and let them have their characteristic on the floor. It's hard, but it's also really exciting and makes something different. So, no, I don't think hospo is broken. I think we just need to work together. And this is just my experience. I know that I haven't gone through too many times. At the start we did, where you're like, shit, am I going to get the bookings and am I going to be able to pay everyone this week? Like, that is a very nerve-wracking feeling, and you will do anything to not be in that situation. But I think there's a way out of that where we could, you know, get a dream team together and you open one restaurant and potentially put your names in one restaurant rather than everyone having their own. Like, take the pressure off a little bit somehow and have, like, I don't know, there's just some ideas, but hospo is not broken.
So, Joe, tell us, what does food mean to you?
It's everything. I think it's definitely community. That's what I've taken out of this experience and being in a regional town. And, you know, especially after time spent on Flinders, it's, you know, food is everything. It's nutrition, it's health, it's our environment, it's, yeah, community, and it's creativity, science. It's such an important part of life, and I just wish we all prioritized it in a joyful way.
Oh, I love it. I feel like that as a food writer as well. It just is everything, and it cuts across every discipline, every stream of activity that there is in the world. Food is there as well.
Do you know, it's interesting because you can see that it also brings pain and, you know, starvation and sadness. So if we don't prioritize it, it's a double-edged sword.
Yes, that's so true as well. Joe, all power to you. It's always so great to learn from you, hear what you're up to. And, yeah, I'm just so excited to have a venison pie.
Yeah, and just a massive shout-out to the Little Picket crew. To Dave, you know, he's the ultimate partner doing this in life and in business, and to Lou and Billy and Luke and the kitchen crew. It's a mammoth effort every week, and everyone's there all the time. And I'm so grateful for the support of our local community who just get behind us. They've come every week, and that's what I mean by team. Like, it's inclusive. So very grateful, and for your support as well.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you, Joe. And yeah, we'll obviously stay in touch and follow your story with interest. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta at Dirty Linen Podcast. We can't wait to hear from you.